Byzantine, complex, abusive, enigmatic, and frustrating are just some of the words I could use to describe the relationship between Dmitri Shostakovich and the Soviet regime between the birth of the Soviet Union in 1917 and the composer's death in 1975. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Dmitri Shostakovich's Violin Concerto No. 1. With the premiere of his first symphony in 1926, Shostakovich was one of the rising stars of the new regime. 10 years later, after Stalin had seen his opera, Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk district, he feared for his life. By admitting his copious compositional errors and writing his fifth symphony, he was restored to favor the following year. Apologizing was always preferable to a one-way trip to the Gulag. During the Great Patriotic War, which we call World War II, the composer was lauded by the regime for his seventh symphony, The Leningrad, which portrayed the defiance of the Soviet Union and was performed around the world. He also won a Stalin Prize for his piano quintet of 1940, a first-rate piece. Things were relatively quiet for the composer in the first few years after the war. He was given a nicer apartment and enjoyed a bit of artistic freedom. The reason for this thaw was not a change in ideology, but rather the country was busy recovering from the devastating destruction of the war with the Nazis and losing 20 million people. However, by 1948, the very year when Shostakovich wrote his Violin Concerto No. 1, artistic repression, like the swallows from Capistrano, had returned. We have comrade Andrei Zhdanov to thank for this particular moment of Soviet misery. Zhdanov was a very powerful Soviet official and was regarded as a possible successor to Stalin. On February 20, 1948, Zhdanov began the anti-formalism campaign. Every composer of note in the Soviet Union was condemned for writing works that contained bourgeois formalism rather than socialist realism. Even composers who had been the darlings of the regime for their entire career, like Aram Khachaturian, were criticized. After listening to Zhdanov harangue them with his endless speech, they were forced to formally apologize. Here is Tikhon Khrennikov, secretary of the Soviet Union of Composers, with his admission of guilt. The Central Committee of the All-Union Communist Party points out in its resolution that formalistic distortions and anti-democratic tendencies have found their fullest expression in the works of such composers as Shostakovich, Prokofiev, Khachaturian, Popov, Myaskovsky, Shebalin, and others. In the music of these composers, we witness a revival of anti-realistic decadent influences calculated to destroy the principles of classical music. These tendencies are peculiar to the bourgeois movement of the era of imperialism, the rejection of melodiousness in music, neglect of vocal forms, infatuation with rhythmic and orchestral effects, the piling up of noisy ear-splitting harmonies, intentional illogicality and unemotionality of music. All these tendencies lead in actual fact to the liquidation of music as one of the strongest expressions of human feelings and thoughts. Like his fellow composers, Shostakovich bent the knee and did his patriotic duty. They had all seen too many of their friends go to prison or worse. During this time of strife, he wrote film music and whatever patriotic schlock was demanded of him. As for his artistic works that would evoke condemnation, like the first violin concerto and the songs from Jewish folk poetry, he kept them in a drawer and awaited better times. Fortunately, better times did indeed come. Stalin died on March 5, 1953, the same day, ironically, as Prokofiev, and the resulting thaw in Soviet artistic control led to the concerto being premiered on October 29, 1955, with David Oistrakh as soloist and the Leningrad Philharmonic, conducted by Yevgeny Mravinsky. To the music, mes petits amis. The work is in four movements, and the first is entitled Nocturne. The tempo is moderate, and the mood elegiac and somber. Low strings set the mood. When the violin enters, don't expect something virtuosic, expect a nocturne, and a dark one at that. ¶¶ Note how spare the orchestration is, just the strings, until a bassoon, a favorite instrument of the composer, joins the violin. Here's our beautiful but sad nocturne melody, which starts rocking us to sleep, but soon becomes agitated, disturbing, but strangely beautiful. Here the violin is joined by a harp playing ethereal harmonics. At about 7 minutes in, the movement reaches its point of peak agitation. At the conclusion, the nocturne returns to the night with the harp harmonics and eventual silence. The great violinist David Oistrakh, for whom this was written, referred to this movement as a suppression of feelings. The second movement, Scherzo, injects tremendous energy into the piece. We begin with solo violin and two wind instruments, clarinet and flute. This movement is one of intense virtuosity, with the violin playing full out nonstop. David Oistrakh called it demoniac. Note this four-note theme which the violin plays. Shostakovich liked to sign his name in music, and while this isn't exactly it, it's close enough. In German musical notation, the name for the note E-flat is S. So, Dmitri Shostakovich, the notes D, S, or E-S, E-flat, C, and H, which is B-natural in the German notation. Here is Shostakovich's actual name in music. Here is what we get in the violin concerto. For the contrasting middle section, Shostakovich uses Eastern European Jewish, or what we now call klezmer music. The manner in which Jewish music was both happy and tragic simultaneously appealed to the composer greatly. He was opposed to the rampant anti-Semitism that was so ingrained in Russian culture, and here was a chance to pay tribute to a culture and people he admired. Then our demonic scherzo returns. And then our Jewish music makes one more reprise. Finally, Shostakovich gives us his signature four-note theme once more, and the movement ends. The third movement of the concerto is a passacaglia. This is a Baroque dance form in triple meter where a relatively short idea or theme is repeated over and over again while variations are spun both above and below. At 17 bars long, Shostakovich's passacaglia theme is a bit long, but it's also fantastic. It sounds like this. First, we hear the theme in the low strings with a stentorian brass playing the variation. Variation 1 has the theme in the tuba and the bassoon while the winds play counter melodies. The violin enters with variation 3, and now the theme is in the low strings. It is frankly heartbreaking. Finally, at variation 7, the violin has the theme in double stops, once again heartbreaking. After 10 variations, the passacaglia fades away. One thing this concerto has been missing until this point is a cadenza. Cadenzas are extended sections where the soloist plays without the orchestra. Usually they're at the end of the first movement, but Shostakovich chooses to place it at the end of the third movement and as a transition into the fourth. In the cadenza, Shostakovich references his themes in the past three movements. We have the dreamy music of the opening nocturne, we have the intense, strident music of the Scherzo second movement, we have Shostakovich's four-note theme representing his name, still in the wrong key, but still. And finally, our Jewish music. The final movement, entitled Burlesque, is a welcome relief from both the cadenza and the elegiac Passacaglia. After having the violin play nonstop for about half an hour, he finally gives the soloist a break while the orchestra plays the raucous opening to the movement. When the violin enters, it jumps straight into the perpetual motion madness. We even get a nice contrasting second theme. In the midst of all this burlesque chaos, what does Shostakovich bring back but the theme from the Passacaglia, which has now undergone a thoroughly burlesque transformation? We end with a dazzling display of violin pyrotechnics and another reference to the Passacaglia. So what is indeed great about Shostakovich's first violin concerto? One, it's an incredible solo part. Not only is the violin required to be an athlete, they're also required to be a mature interpreter. Two, incredibly tasteful and restrained use of orchestra. Like Mahler, Shostakovich's orchestra is a never-ending array of chamber orchestras that keep combining and recombining in the freshest and most interesting ways. This is a man who is never afraid to do less and always ends up with more. Three, we explore just about every aspect of the human condition, from the contemplative nocturne to the raucous scherzo to the stunning and heart-wrenching passacaglia and cadenza, and finally we end up with humor. There's nothing not covered here in this musical world. Shostakovich loved Mahler, and Mahler felt that the symphony should be a world unto itself. Shostakovich achieves this in his violin concerto in his own unique way. Postscript. 1948 was a sad time in the Soviet Union. Despite its burlesque ending, Shostakovich's first violin concerto is a difficult and elegiac piece. But how could it be otherwise? After losing 20 million people in the war, everyone must have known someone who was mourning. Everyone must have known someone who went to prison because of Stalin's tyranny, or, once again, worse. Shostakovich saw all this and captured this strange mixture of sadness, defiance, and happiness that he witnessed on a daily basis. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this has been a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Dmitri Shostakovich's Violin Concerto No. 1.